You've tuned in to the Round Table Podcast, episode 25. Hello, literary alchemists. I'm Dave Robison.
And I'm Brian Humphrey.
And you're listening to the Round Table Podcast.
Each and every week on the Round Table Podcast, we invite writers to come on the show and pitch their story ideas to Dave and myself and our esteemed guest host.
And then we dive into it. We don't dig, we dive. We wallow. Nice. We splash. We hold our breath and immerse ourselves in the story, seeking for bright spots of light to gather together until we have a radiant glowing orb of literary gold.
That's right. And to any of my students that are listening, that was an extremely extended and mixed metaphor.
Something that is becoming my signature piece.
So, we love it.
Oh, yes. Brian, what have you been writing, my friend?
I have, finally.
Yes. This is good.
This is good. Like, you know, I try to set aside some time to write as often as I can. And with this podcast, like, we were rocking it out last month.
Oh, God, no kidding.
And there just was no time. And so finally, I was like, I have to write or I'm going to die. And so I've been writing. I had sent you at one point, like, my first foray into literary fiction.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine came down from Estes, and we had lunch and kind of talked it over, and he was extremely insightful, just as you were. And cool. So with all of the insight from him and all of the insight from you, I'm going to really kind of rock this thing out. And I think I've discovered exactly what I need to do with it.
Sweet.
And then in the meantime, I dug out my one and only ever attempt at writing science fiction from 5 years ago.
Okay.
And have... like re-visioned the entire thing, and now I think it's pretty badass, so I'll be sending you that soon.
Dude, you are literally en fuego.
I know, and then I've also been working on the new book and sort of contemplating digging out the old one and finally doing something with it. So I'm kind of, you know, I'm on a roll, which
you
is
are.
Good.
Yeah. When you get that head of steam going, by God, ride that roller coaster wherever it takes you. That's fabulous.
Yeah, no kidding. And you've been doing something too. What's up?
Well, actually, yeah, and it's kind of weird because I've sent you stuff from time to time, which we have done for years now. But this is, you know, I haven't really sat down and written anything new for a very long time. And there's this very cool website. And I want to give him a shout out called everyphototells.com.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And every month at the top of the month, they put a photo and invite writers to tell a story about that photo somehow, to draft a story around that. Let that be a photo prompt for some literary endeavor. And then you have the month to write it, you submit it, they go through them, they pick them. I think they might podcast one or two, I don't know. I know they put the ones they pick up on the website, which is very cool. And the photo for July, we're recording this in mid-July, really caught my attention and got me thinking. And I've actually outlined what might actually be the first literary work I've attempted in a very long time. By the time this episode airs, we'll actually find out if Dave made his deadline.
That's right.
But if nothing else, I've found a very cool spark that's gotten me to the keyboard again, which is awesome.
That's awesome. So,
yeah.
Good for you.
Thank you.
That's great. And you know that, like, I use that sometimes in teaching. I'll put weird photographs up, especially there's a really good website called, oh crap, that's not what it's called.
No,
it's called something
so.
Like 1,000 picture, 1,000 words, 1,000words.com.
Okay.
Is that what it's called?
Okay.
Something like that. Or it's worth1000.com.
Okay. Worth1000. Okay.
Yeah. And it's a lot of photo contests, and they do a lot of like surrealism contests and, you know, putting wings on cats and all kinds of just weird shit. But just like spend 5 minutes and you will have ideas for, you know, a 20 book series in fantasy fiction. It's amazing.
That's awesome. We'll include each of those in the liner notes for the episode. That's great.
Totally.
That's very cool.
It's really, really cool. And
speaking of cool,
Oh, yeah.
Let's introduce our guest host, shall we?
Let's do that.
Yeah. Because, friends, you heard him in the 20 Minutes With episode, and if you didn't, by God, hit pause right now. Go and listen to it because it was fabulous. He's back this time to help us workshop an episode. Doctor of Philosophy, Professor of Philosophy and Religious Studies, fences like a mofo and will mess you up if you get in front of him and he has a sword in his hand, writing a book that aligns mythology and spirituality to the crafting of superior characters, and the evil genius of the mythicscribes.com online writing community. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Skype line, Mr. Antonio Del Drago, because I love to say the name so many times. Thanks for coming back.
Thanks, Dave.
You're very welcome. Thank you for making the time.
My pleasure.
Tony, you've clearly got a lot going on. What's coming up in the next days, weeks, and months that our fans and listeners need to know about?
Well, as I mentioned in the last podcast, I'm currently putting the finishing touches on a book called The Mythic Guide to Heroes and Villains.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and it's going to be a kind of a neat overview of the qualities of a hero, the qualities of a villain. I'm going to draw upon mythology and some Jungian psychology as well in the process. And I'm hoping that'll be out within the next couple of months. The book itself is written, it needs edited, and it needs to be formatted properly in ebook format. So,
yes. And where is that going to become available?
It'll be available on mythicscribes.com, and it will be free.
Now let me ask you, Tony. Are people required to be members of Mythic Scribes, or can anybody get it?
It'll be available to anyone who wants it.
You are a generous, generous soul. That's fabulous. Now, Tony, do you go to cons at all?
I've never been to one yet.
Really? Oh, dude, we need to bring you down that dark and sinister path of con attendance. There's some amazing stuff going on.
I would love that.
Yeah, yeah. What part of the country are you in?
I live near Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. There's got to be a fantasy con
I'm sure there's in
Pittsburgh. If nothing else, heck, Gen Con's in Indianapolis. That can't be too far from Pittsburgh. Well, gentlemen, let's pause here for a promotional break where we can showcase another awesome podcast or fabulous ebook. When we return, we can workshop a story. How's that sound?
Sounds perfect. Awesome.
Yes, I think so too. So dear friends, do stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is Christoph Laputka, author and creator of the Leviathan Chronicles. Do you want to learn how to make your own audio drama?
The best thing about the whole process is that nobody appreciates it but us.
You're not singing and you're not in a band, then you should not be using a mic that's too good, because it picks up
everything, right?
Everything, yeah. Right. You know.
Do you want to learn more about directing voice actors?
For me, it is a performance, and I appreciate it when somebody else delivers a performance and recognizes that this is some kind of art form and not just something that we're doing as a little community to get stories out there.
Do you want to take your podcast to the next level?
Well, this is supposed to be a superior way to do it. It's just that if you're using the kind of free software that's available for a PC, you probably haven't done this before because it's not really convenient to do
something. Mm-hmm. But most people don't realize that you release under a non-com, no derivatives license. That doesn't mean that you can't then take what you did and go not just publish a book, but adapt it for the screen.
Hmm.
Or sell the podcast that you've recorded to the BBC for broadcast in another country.
Mm-hmm.
Then you need to tune in to the Full Cast podcast with Brian Lincoln and Abigail Hilton. The best place to get information on the production and assembly of great podcasts and great audio drama.
I mean, talking to you guys, everyone I talk to, I feel like I've learned something from. Everyone's got their strengths and backgrounds. Different people have a background in music or in film or... You know, I'm in science, so maybe I would be the kind of person that might try to actually design some sort of a noise reduction filter from raw code. Not that I have, but...
Tune in to the Fullcast Podcast.
Our website is fullcastpodcast.com.
And we're back and moving straight into the workshop proper. We have a, from what I hear, I haven't heard much about it, but we have a really awesome story coming in. And so Dave, tell us all about it.
Oh no, I'll tell you about the writer. I'll let the writer showcase the awesomeness of the story. But our writer is one of those multifaceted artist types. He is, of course, a writer. You can find his story collection, All Roads Lead to Blue Lake, on Smashwords and Amazon, and also podcast on his website. Mark Short is another fine tale from his, which, given his name, has irony and subtext and double entendre-age in play. He's currently working on one that I just love saying over and over again, Stragoye, because you must say it with Russian accent and is fun to do. And that is currently in the process, also being podcast from his website, which is Pencils Poised, Mark Vale, MARCVALE .blogspot.com, which he has been doing for almost 2 years now, so there's much goodness to be found. And he's also a musician. Any music that you hear in his podcasts, that's not from some website somewhere, canned and so on. No, this is all organically grown directly in his wonderful music beds. See what I did there? Music beds.
Music beds, yes.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the Skype line, Mr. Mark Vale. Mark, dude, thank you so much for stepping up and offering a story, man. We appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Definitely. Absolutely. Now, yeah. Mark, you've been doing markvale.blogspot.com for almost 2 years. I'm betting that you've written for more than that. What got you into the writing scene as opposed to the music scene, which is apparently another of your gifts and talents?
I got married, and the first thing that happened was...
Most people say I was NaNoWriMo. I was like, no, I got married.
No. Actually, I had never heard of NaNoWriMo until about last year.
Really?
Yeah, so I wrote all these stories just to write them. I just started. I was one of those talkers. Oh, one day I'm going to write a story. Oh, one day. And then I decided I'm going to be a doer.
Time to walk the talk.
Yeah, so I went ahead and started writing these things, and I found out I was god-awful. But I kept at it. Yeah, I kept at it, and I was kept learning, went through the process, went through it again and again and again and again. And started from short stories, like the two that you talked about, all the way to 120,000 word novels. So that's me. Yeah,
holy
for about
crap.
10 years.
Fabulous.
Yeah, that's maybe 10, 11 years. Yeah.
Excellent. Now these 120,000 word novels, what's their status?
Well, one of them is Stragoye.
Oh, excellent.
So, yeah, that's the big one right now.
Very cool. Very cool. Just real quick, summarize, what's Stragoye about?
Stragoye is my witch story, and it started off as a totally different concept, and then I thought, oh, I'll write this short story for about this granddaughter and grandmother, and they go on a trip, and all of a sudden, it caught on, and I thought, well, I'll just add on, and I'll add on, and I'll add on, and you get a novel from one little trip to all of a sudden, my God, what's going on? It's like a family saga.
Oh, man. That sounds fabulous.
Yeah. Oh, thanks.
And how far are you along in the podcasting of that story?
I'm almost halfway through.
Oh, dude. Friends, yeah. Go out to the markvale.blogspot.com. Check that bad boy out. But, Mark, you've brought another saga, a dark tale to weave for us, did you not?
I did.
Excellent, excellent. Well, then here comes the fun part. This is where we turn the mic over to you, Mark. And I don't think I've ever said that, the mic over to Mark. No, I've never said that. But give us the... Mark this date. Mark, I see what he did there. Give us the title, the genre, the format, whether it's a short story, novel, novella, whatever. Introduce us to some of the characters. And then give us a brief signpost summary of the story itself. And we'll give you 5 to 8 minutes to do that. And then we'll get into some workshopping. So, Mark, the mic is all yours, babe. We won't get in the way.
All right. I'll try to get it done in 8. The name of the story is Dark Agent. And this is the drama action superhero story with no powers and no magic. And I have a pitch for it. It's my pitch is Dennis Asher loses his wife and son due to a botched up robbery. He's left with only two choices, suicide or become the Dark Agent. My theme for the story is it's a story about a man avenging his family's death. Nice and simple. And my setting is in a made-up city on our own planet, on Earth, in our current time. So there's no real sci-fi-ish part on that. I got about four main characters, and when you write, you never know what else comes up. But my first one is my protagonist. He's Dennis Asher. He's also a slightly self-antagonist. He's a 39-year-old married man raising his only son. He's overweight and has a mediocre job, but what he lacks in physical strength, he makes up for in determination and problem-solving. And later, he suffers domestic trauma due to his death of his wife and son. The tragedy leaves him to deal with his own inner conflicts as he takes revenge on all the criminals, hoping one day to catch the man that killed his family. And then I have Dr. Olbin, who is a side character. He's a psychiatrist in his late 20s. He's assigned to Dennis to recover after his loss. He's fresh out of college. He works for the city. He's eager to please, but he sometimes overanalyzes his clients. Then I have Josh, who is a side character. He's an 11-year-old boy living with his abusive drug-dealing dad, and his mother died from an overdose, so it's just them two. He's an only child, and Josh hates everything his dad does, but he loves him unconditionally. But he's beginning to fear his dad will get killed if he keeps selling drugs. And then my last character I have is Eugene. He's my antagonist, and he's Josh's dad. He's actually an ex-Marine, and he's in his mid-30s, and he wound up being a middleman drug dealer. He loves his son, but when he's intoxicated, he sees Josh as a burden and puts him down mentally and actually even beats him. But Eugene's motivations for everything is money. He likes to get high. He likes to play around in the red district. And he wants to get away from it all, including using drugs for a more stable life. He's one of those he'll be your best friend kind of character, and then all of a sudden he'll stab you in the back. So that's how he is. And this story is going to be has three points of view. It's Dennis's, Dr. Olbin's, and Eugene's. And then I got the story plot real quick. I'll try to get through that one as fast as possible. I got four little acts. Act one is Dennis loses his wife and his son, but he tries to commit suicide after that, and then he's hospitalized. And then he's assigned counseling with Dr. Olbin. And during the sessions with Dr. Olbin, he views Dennis as a man slowly rebuilding his life, as Dennis does volunteer work to help protect citizens from crime. But after about a year, he's tired and mad that the city's becoming worse as crime is on the rise. So he starts working out for stress relief and for the goal of avenging his family. So he takes on extreme intense trainings to push his body. And after he's done that, he's all built up, he starts taking defense combat classes like boxing, Krav Maga, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and he installs a scanner, a police scanner in his car so he can search for criminal activity. And then later, he puts together this outfit, a black outfit, like a police/SWAT uniform. And then he fights against crime, and he finds this robber holding up a convenience store, and he takes the guy down, which really builds up his confidence. But through a surveillance camera, the fight is recorded, and it's set viral on the internet, and Dennis is labeled the Dark Agent. So Dennis goes back to see Dr. Olbin. He's still continuing sessions, and he's talking about how he found this new lust for life, but doesn't reveal the reason. And Dr. Olbin stresses his concerns and worries Dennis is becoming manic. And then the Dark Agent stops a few more robberies, a few more robbers, all kinds of stuff, and his reputation is building in the city, which is putting a target on his head. And then I have Act 2. Act 2 actually switches over to Eugene. Eugene starts his day off in a good mood. He feels optimistic about finding a legitimate job and trying to get out of the drug business. But until then, he doesn't bite the hand that feeds him. So after he sends Josh off to school, he sees his regular hooker slash girlfriend, because he likes to play in a red light district, to take care of his needs sexually and drug-wise. So they get high and enjoy all that kind of stuff. He tells his boss he's going to get out of the business. The boss says, well, you can, but before you do that, all your clients have got to go to a new guy that I want you to train. And if you don't do it, I lose my customers. And if I lose my customers, I'm going to kill your son. So Eugene has to stay in there until everything is completed. And after that discussion, Eugene sees the son and he promises Josh that everything's going to get better. And then he lights up a bowl to relax because of the stress of the world, so he gets high again. And after Josh complains that there's nothing to eat, Eugene, who is now high and drunk, takes him to the grocery store to get some food. But he feels the stress coming back and takes all of his frustrations out on his son. And then when they get back home, Eugene gets a call from the new dealer that they have to meet up so he can get find out who all the clients he's got to take over for. But before they head out, Eugene's hooker slash girlfriend tells him she's working and can't babysit Josh. So Eugene takes his son with him to the drug deals, and he's hoping it's his last time that he ever has to do that. And that's Act Two. And then in Act Three, Dennis encounters Josh and Eugene at the grocery store and witnesses when Eugene hit Josh, but he hit him so hard that he was almost unconscious. So this triggers a huge emotion in Dennis, since he doesn't have a family, and he watches as Eugene just beats his son, and he can't believe it. So Dennis follows them and watches Eugene do his drug dealings for that night. And he also sees Josh in the car, in his dad's car, where he's pretty safe. And then Dennis starts planning on taking Eugene down to save Josh and get another criminal off the streets. And during all that, Dr. Olbin starts to connect that Dennis is actually the Dark Agent and tries to gain proof that he's correct. And he starts looking for Dennis before he does something stupid. And then the big fight, this is like the big archway for both of them. During the takedown the fight between Eugene and the Dark Agent, things go wrong as Dennis ends up beating Eugene to death and killing him because he's so tunnel vision that he doesn't realize how angry he is. But the Dark Agent has fans and someone video records the fight. And during the fight, Dennis is unmasked, so he's revealed. And then all of a sudden, he's taken under custody and imprisoned for murder. But during the trial, Josh is taken away by the state to be raised in a foster care. Now, when Dennis is in jail, that's when he finds out who actually killed his wife and son. So he goes out and he takes great joy in actually killing him. And he does this. He just turned into this madman. And so now he's doing time for two life sentences, so he can never get out. And that's Act Three. And then my last one is more of the end. It's 28 years later, and Dennis is 67, and he's a big fish in the pond, in prison, but he still has nightmares about his wife and his son being killed. And he hasn't had a visitor in years until Josh, who is now a man with a beautiful family, brings Dennis a message. So Josh comes in, and he meets the man who killed his father. He explains how it took a long time for him to realize that Dennis did something that needed to be done, but it still hurts. And he thanks him for helping him and his dad actually get out of that kind of life, of the drug life, but he won't ever be able to forgive him for his actions. And then the very last scene would be during the visit, Josh brings a newspaper with an article about the Dark Agent's triumphant return. And Josh and Dennis lock eyes for a moment, looking from one Dark Agent to another. And then Josh promises this time the Dark Agent will never take another human life. And that's the end.
Bam. All right.
Yeah. All right.
Well done, sir. Oh, so much rich food. Before we do the disclaimer, Mark, what are you hoping to get out of this discussion?
Character development, any kind of story ideas that I didn't think of that could make it even more golden than possible.
Awesome. I think we can provide. But first, we must cover our ass. Brian, would That's you right. be so kind
Yes, yes. As this is your story and you have been so kind to bring it to us and allow us to pick it apart and throw ideas to you and give suggestions, anything that is said by either myself or Dave or Dr. Antonio Del Durago, I wanted to say it too, so get that in there, isn't very, or could be and very likely is complete and total bullshit. So you're more than welcome to disregard any and everything that we have to say, but hopefully you'll find something that you can use in what is bantered about.
Indeed, our highest hope. So, that's and right. To kick us off, we always defer to our guest host, he who is sitting in the biggest chair at the round table. So, Tony, if you would, lead us off with this. What are your first impressions of Mark's story idea? Any questions of clarifications or things that occur to you? Start us off, sir.
This will be fun.
Yes, it will.
Okay, Mark, I enjoy the story, and I especially like the ending. I like the fact that the vigilante ends up in jail.
Oh, yes. Good.
That's a bit different than what you usually find in these kind of stories. Yep. My first question for you is, what can you do to make this story even more different than things such as The Punisher or Kick-Ass? What twist can you put on it to make it a little bit different? You've seen The Punisher, right?
Oh, yeah. Both versions.
Yes. And Kick-Ass?
Oh, yeah. I've seen Kick-Ass, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There are shades of both of those in your story.
Absolutely agree with that, yeah.
Especially how, like, your hero becomes famous through a viral video. I think that's what happens with Kick-Ass as well.
Right, right. Well, and that's why Mark's here. You know, if we see some of those things where maybe we can shore something up or offer an alternative perspective, yeah. That's what Mark's here for, and that's what we're here to do. So that's a good signpost to put up, Tony. We will definitely fall into that. I think we all might have ideas about that as well.
Well, yeah. let me try and help here.
Go for it.
Why does he choose to call himself the Dark Agent?
Well, he doesn't. He was actually just labeled that. He doesn't really care. He just wants to get out there and find whoever killed his wife and son.
Mm-hmm. Is he wearing a costume of some kind?
Yeah, he went out to like army surplus store and found all these this black outfit that looks like a SWAT kind of uniform.
Mm-hmm. So why do they call him the Dark Agent? Why was he given that name? As opposed to SWAT guy.
The SWAT guy. Yeah, there you go. The SWATter.
The SWATter. There's something about him that made him look like a Dark Agent. What would that be?
I don't know. I guess when I was thinking about it, I was just thinking his internal struggles of... But I don't know. I don't know why they would call him that. Maybe somebody would just thought, oh, look at that, a Dark Agent.
Well, let's try something else here. Let's try and connect this with his past before the death of his family. What's his backstory?
His backstory is he...
Briefly.
He was... Yeah, he was a common guy. He had a mediocre job. He was raising this kid. He was a happy guy. Had a good childhood. Nothing really crazy that happened to him until all of a sudden... That robbery. So, his backstory is not really anything that... There's no tragedy. There's no nothing. There's, like... I mean, it was a common, basic childhood.
Mm-hmm. Man. Well, let's think about this for a minute. Is it possible that your character is more than a little deranged? Yeah, usually vigilantes aren't the sanest of people.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so he could have a couple quirks here and there, or something that's a little off-kilter.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you saw somebody you described as a Dark Agent, what would they look like? In your mind, you know, other than Dennis.
Something terrifying. Something that would... that you wouldn't want to mess with. Mm-hmm. He or she would have to... go beyond something that somebody with morals would actually not do.
Well, when you think of agent, do you think of secret agent, like Men in Black or something like that? Or more like just something really dark and diabolical?
More dark and diabolical.
what if one possibility we could throw out there is, what if Dennis, the way he learns to cope after this horrible tragedy is he himself becomes a drug addict?
Ooh, yeah.
There you go.
And what if in some strange way he's taking some new synthetic drug, something like bath salts, but better? And the drug itself makes him fearless and kind of crazy and destructive.
Sure. Maybe Dr. Oldman has access to experimental antidepressants that could maybe unlock that possibility. Yeah, you can make that.
Or especially because you said that he's eager to please and he's eager to sort of make a name for himself. So I think he'd be open to using things that maybe weren't approved yet.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Something, a possibility. Now, Tony, why? What does that give Mark in terms of character development and story progress?
Well, one thing that occurred to me is maybe in some roundabout way he discovers that Eugene is part of his supply chain.
Yeah, there you go, the connection.
Mm-hmm. And you know, that of course creates an interesting balance between the hero and the villain. And that really, you know, the hero is addicted to the same substance that the villain makes his money off of selling. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, you can create a parallel between the two, because perhaps on one level, Dennis thinks he's so much better than Eugene. Eugene's this drug dealer, but really, he's, in a roundabout way, a customer.
Right.
Yeah. That's an interesting irony.
Eugene's actually trying to get out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Dennis is actually perpetuating it.
Yeah, he's just going down day by day, and Eugene's trying to get out of it. So
that's very cool. That parallel and antithesis is very tasty.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. And I kind of like the crazy down and dirty aspect of going with something really, really dark and black market drug wise, kind of like bath salts or K2 or something of that nature. That has the effect of bringing out the worst in people, and is kind of untested and unsafe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Brian, what do you got for opening comments, bud?
Holy crap. Yes. What do I don't have? Okay, so one thing that I think would might really be a good thing to look at is, have you ever heard of Phoenix Jones?
No, I haven't.
Okay, he's this guy. I don't know where he is. He's a real guy, and he lost his son. And so he decided that the police needed help. And so he's out there and he has a superhero outfit and he calls himself Phoenix Jones. And, you know, he goes out and fights crime on his own. And he uses like a can of that spray stuff, pepper spray kind of a thing, right? Mm-hmm. But he's actually got like the upper body suit with the mask, and it's actually bulletproof.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, but the reason that I mention it is that he deals a lot with police and with public ridicule and all of these different things. And he's trying to explain why he's out there. And it might be a really interesting thing to kind of look at some of the things that he said, look at some of his interviews, just to kind of give you an idea of how this character may, as soon as he's caught on video and people start talking about him and giving him a name, the kinds of things that he might be dealing with along with everything else, about people talking about what he's doing. And, you know, because you're going to have a lot of people who don't agree with what he's doing, as well as the devoted fans. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that just might be something to kind of look at for some background stuff. One of the things with the uniform is, I think it has to be, when he goes and he buys it, it has to be specifically for anonymity with no sense of, I'm going to be a superhero. You know what I mean?
He's just trying to get out of just trying to cope, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that I want to wear something that's going to protect me because I'm going to try this. And there's no sense of, I want it to look cool because I want to be a badass superhero. You know,
yeah.
So I think that it has to be that anonymity thing, and that's his goal. And, you know, and even if it's like sunglasses are going to help me have anonymity, and, you know, people are always associating guys in black with sunglasses to, you know, to some kind of agency. And so that might help with the name a little bit. And then another thing is, I want to feel that he went too far with Eugene. you have a really excellent structure for the entire story. I think you've nailed it. You've laid it out. It's got a good flow to it. There are some things that can bring a lot of power to it, and one of them is with Eugene. I think if there isn't, when people beat kids, mm-hmm. I as a reader lose absolutely every piece of sympathy for them at all. I don't care what their intentions are. I don't care if they're trying to get out. I don't care if they feel bad about it. If you hit a kid, I want to kill you. You know, yeah. Like I have absolutely zero patience for that. And I want to feel like when Dennis kills Eugene, that he went too far. And if Eugene is that abusive, I'm not going to feel that way. I'm going to feel like, yeah, he absolutely deserved it. And then I'm going to feel kind of cheated when he ends up in jail. And I know that later he ends up in jail for going and killing, you know, all the people that killed his family. But I think there needs to be, just to create that little spark of conflict, that maybe it's something that he is misinterpreting about Eugene and Josh's relationship. And Eugene can still be a bad guy, mm-hmm. and a, you know, a hateful guy or a hated guy. But I would just warn against going too far with the abuse thing so that we absolutely hate Eugene and want him to die. Because I think that we need to sort of scream out and say, wait, don't kill him. You know, have the police come and get him, but don't pull the trigger. And then when he does, then that really heightens that conflict. Yeah. And I have more, but I know that Dave is chomping at the bit. But go ahead.
I was going to say, if he's just screaming at him, though, you know, even, you know, showing that not a physical hit, but mm-hmm. screaming. Because, you know, parents, sometimes and you're like, you don't mean to, and you're like, but I have drunken, and, you know, he's intoxicated during that time, too, so.
Right.
His emotions are whoosh.
Yeah. But no, I agree with you. I warn against, you know, you said he beats him so hard that he, you know, he almost loses consciousness. And that would be enough for me to say, just shoot him. Kill him. You know?
Well, let me jump in.
On the bottom of my shoe.
Let me jump in here real quick. Yeah. Mark, I before I give you any notes, I have one question, and it's a really important one. And that really is, what kind of story are you trying to tell here? Because you can tell from where Tony's come at it, where Brian's come at it, and where I'm getting ready to come at it, has a very different slant. And I want to make sure that either A, we're giving you the kind of feedback you were hoping for, or B, you're open to exploring what I think is ending up gliding towards a very different story than you came to the table with. So what kind of story are you wanting to tell here? Is this a redemption story? Is this a superhero story? Is it gritty noir? I mean, where do you see this fitting on the emotional spectrum?
It's probably just... it started off as a revenge story, but then I thought, well, I always love the superheroes that don't have any powers. And I thought he would just go out and he wants to get rid of the pain, but he also wants the vengeance to actually get the guy that actually took his family away from him.
Okay.
And that was pretty much it.
What's the message of your book? And I'm not talking the big moral or any of that stuff, but I mean, every good book that we've read, there's a feeling there that you walk away from that going, yes, I want to be honorable, or ooh, I loved the politics of this, or whatever. What do you see as being that thing that your readers will take away from this?
Probably that family is the most important thing to a person.
Okay.
And that's, at least it was for him.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Then if that's, let's use that as a theme, because that actually kind of short circuits a couple of, I think, everybody's comments about this. Because what you've presented us with, Mark, has the potential for being a very dark psychological thriller,
right?
Not a superhero story.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely.
Okay.
And the opportunities for, as Tony pointed out, exploring the underside of the tropes of the superhero story, I don't know whether you intended to or not, but you have set up a rich framework for doing exactly that. And, you know, but if we're going with a family is the most important thing vibe, then I think there's other notes that we can give as well. And I just want to ask, as a turning point right here, where do you want us to go?
I'm open for anything.
Well, then we're going to go dark. All right. We're going to
go dark.
We're going to go dark.
It's our favorite place to go.
I don't want to derail this from the story you wanted to tell, but let's, you know, there, like I say, three of us that are gathered here to discuss your story are being drawn in one direction. So let us go there. And as Brian said, mine from it what you will, yes. and see where it takes us. Okay.
All right.
First of all, wow, awesome. Obviously, we've already had some great discussion on this. I'm going to back up Tony's observations that you have a lot of overlays, very resonant overlays to Dark Knight, to Kick-Ass, to Punisher, to all of those. And the opportunity to take those and spin them a different way is one I think to pursue. As far as Dennis goes, what if he loses his wife and his son is in a coma and may recover? By doing so, you give Dennis hope. You give him something that he might be able to fall back on, but it's a tenuous hope. It's a hope that slips with each passing day as his psychosis and his depression deepens. Just something to put out there, because with Eugene and his son being the spark and the catalyst for Dennis's rage and ensuing quest against Eugene, having that a stronger parallel, a stronger resonance to somebody that Dennis can actually touch but not engage with might heighten that pain a little more. Does that make sense at all?
Yep, sure does.
Okay. The notion that he hasn't had much of a life up to this point doesn't resonate for me. And that doesn't mean it doesn't work. But if there's something in Dennis's present psychosis that can bring him to kill somebody by Act 3, then there's something, some seed of that in his youth, in his college years, or in his young adulthood. Something. Guns, growing up in a bad neighborhood, something that inured him to violence that would allow him to take the path of violence when trying to resolve his issues. And that might actually bring in some cool background characters that he could draw upon in his growing quest to be this vigilante hero. You could enhance the story and give some hooks into his backstory by having him contact some of these old friends to get him equipment or tell him about a part of town that he's not familiar with or blah, 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 and have him create a network of people that are kind of supporting him inadvertently in his psychosis. Does that jibe at all?
Yeah, I like the environmental background. Yeah.
And I've got other stuff as well, but I'm going to pass the mic off back to Tony to continue the discussion.
Great ideas all around.
Yeah.
Drawing upon what Dave said about interesting characters in the background, one thing you may want to consider, it's been done a lot, but you can do it in a different way, is perhaps giving him a mentor type figure. There's somebody deep, deep in this dark world that he goes to for help and advice, kind of sets him up with what he needs to be this badass vigilante.
Interesting.
Maybe make that mentor practically evil. I mean, somebody who's really on the dark side, but yet who has some sort of history with Dennis that gives him a connection where he wants to help him out.
Okay. Yeah. And maybe a connection to his past as well, somebody that he's always gone to. May not gone to, but yeah, something along those lines to give him a nudge along those paths. And then somebody else, like maybe, you know, Dr. Oldman, who's trying to nudge him in a different path.
Because Dr. Oldman, go ahead.
No, I'm looking at the tensions that you have drawn in the storyline with Eugene wanting to get out and can't. Dennis wanting his family back and can't. Dr. Oldbin even wanting to help Dennis and can't. There are so many thwarted desires in here. Mm-hmm. And right. The tension is drawn so tight that accenting those and using those, being cognizant of them and using them in the telling of the tale, I think would help you in amping up the energy of the piece. Go ahead, Tony. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to derail.
No, that's a great idea. I especially like the contrast between having a dark mentor figure on one hand and the good doctor trying to lead him to sanity on the other hand. Perhaps it's almost like an angel demon type scenario, one on each shoulder,
sure,
trying to move you in different directions. Mm-hmm. You could do a lot with
and,
that.
And the dark one's just saying, well, if you really want to get your life back, here's how you do it. Go out and find him and kill, you know, something real darker.
Yeah, you've got to find and confront
him. Give him the motivation, yeah.
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 And may even use him as some kind of low-level enforcer in some way.
Yep.
You know, within his own empire.
Yeah.
And the other thing I'm thinking about is, does Dennis have a code of some kind that he follows?
Right.
Perhaps he should have a moral code of some kind that's defined in some way. And it seems at the end of the story, he's at peace with going to prison, isn't he?
After 28 years, I guess. He's at peace. He's not at peace when he first goes. He's at peace when he actually finds that person that has either put his family in comas or has killed them.
Mm-hmm. Maybe at some point he realizes that he belongs in prison because he broke whatever code he had in some way.
Could be the old Batman don't kill anyone code.
Maybe more along the lines of, am I someone my son would be proud of? Maybe he looks up as that final blow crunches into Eugene's throat and he gurgles his last. He looks up and sees Josh staring horrified from the car, watching his father be beaten to death by this man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that just guts him like a fish right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let me jump in on that for a second, because I wanted to go back, following that exact idea, I wanted to go back to something that Dave was saying about, maybe his son didn't die, but is in a coma. And maybe rather than that, he does lose his son, but Josh and Eugene are already people that are in some way in his life or in his neighborhood, or he's seen them around. And he sees them frequently enough that he starts to look at Josh as, you know, well, here's a boy that is similar in age to mine, and I lost mine, and here's a father who completely neglects his child. And he sees that while he's doing all of these other things. And then when that moment comes down and he does kill Eugene, then you have Josh in the car. Dennis has built this fantasy relationship with Josh in his head, and he sees the look that this kid has and realizes that no matter how bad the kid's father was, he just took the kid's father away.
Well, and
that's part of his code that he broke.
Yeah. And you know, one thing that struck me in Act Two is the catalyzing event of Eugene striking the boy.
Right.
And I'm gonna go on the other side of Brian and say that Eugene let me go back. having Dennis, you know, a couple of foil attempts, muggings, keep it low key, maybe not necessarily foiling a robbery, but street crime that it makes sense that he can engage with in some way. And then the scene with Eugene being a catalyzing event, you know, before he was just becoming re-empowered. Now there's purpose. Now it's not just general crime. It's Josh. Like you were saying, Brian, he fixates on Josh. And whether he recognizes Eugene, whether Eugene's his supplier or not, I mean, either way that works. And now you've got, this connection going on. And again, tensions, the nurturing impulse of a father to a son, whereas the rage of someone who would work against that. And yet Eugene is his father and he's cognizant of that. He's aware of that. That's the edge, the razor that he's moving along as the story moves forward, is that conflict between not wanting to scar the boy for life by killing his father and killing his father. Oh my God. Now, I would argue, and I'm not saying that you can hit a child and be sympathetic. I agree with Brian on that, Mark. However, if Mark, you draw Eugene as someone who is pathetic, hopeful, and with the best intentions and without the will to achieve them, and intelligent enough to recognize that in himself, but still too weak to actually do what needs to be done to get out of that. I think, you know, yes, if he strikes Josh, that's bad. And that marks him as a bad guy. And there's no redemption from that. But if we can relate to his inability to change his circumstances, mm-hmm. and we want him to do so desperately, and then he strikes him and we know he's lost, then we've already connected to him, and the pain that the reader feels in losing that hope and then seeing Dennis as really, I mean, we were talking about anti-heroes during the 20 minutes with, Dennis is becoming an anti-hero at this point. He can either save Josh. The thing to do is to call social services, dude, but he doesn't. Why not? Why doesn't he call social services right then and there and get Josh out of there? There's got to be a reason. And that reason, you know, I think we're dancing around it at this point. We might find it before we're done. But that reason is the hook, the sharp, razor bright hook that drives Dennis's character.
Yeah. And I think that what I was hung up on was the idea that Eugene beat Josh regularly, or that it had happened before, and maybe uh-huh. it hadn't. Maybe it's something that, you know, he's yelled at him, he's sort of verbally abused him a little
he's
bit,
thrown but, things,
yeah, but
punched
that,
a wall.
All of a sudden, he's at this frustration level, and I don't want the boss, the and anytime I say I don't want, you can go fuck you, Brian. But I don't want the like the big boss man to be like, oh yeah, I'll let you out as long as you find, you know, my client someone else to buy from.
Yeah,
I'd rather that he be like, you know, no, you're never getting out, and Eugene brings someone else in and is putting the clients on that person so that he can make a withdrawal almost quietly, or try to escape.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So that
there
there's
is
a
no
more,
hope.
There's a little more tension.
There is no hope of Eugene getting out of the business.
But as he does that, whoever he brings in or whatever, just bad shit happens. And you have to see the movie if you haven't seen it, Very Bad Things. And that's an excellent example of like one little bad thing that then they just make stupid decision after stupid decision. And by the end, they're all paraplegic and just, you know, fucked up. But
I've seen that.
Yeah, it's a horrible, like, I hate it, but I love it at the same time. But yeah. But that's the idea, is that he gets so frustrated that finally there's that moment where Josh just says something and Eugene just unloads on him, and Dennis happens to see that. And I think that's the other thing, is that you have to keep the two perceptions completely different so that we can be sympathetic toward Eugene because we see his side of it and know, you know, oh, we've all felt the frustration. We just had the frame of mind or the non-intoxication to keep ourselves from hitting. Right. And then we also see what Dennis saw, and the fact that Dennis didn't see all of this building to this one moment, and, you know, so that Dennis can't have that sympathy for him. And then we understand why Dennis does it, but we don't want him to. Yeah.
And have some very cool moments between Eugene and Josh where they get along, where they are buds, and he is a good father.
Mm-hmm. Or, and when Eugene says something and then regrets it, and we see that very deep regret. That's all I'm going to say, and then I'm done.
Okay. Tony, back to you.
I keep turning back to the question that you asked, why doesn't he call the police? Why doesn't this guy trust the justice system to handle whatever's going wrong in the world? Why does he feel the need to take it all upon himself?
That's a good question.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Let's workshop that a little bit. What do we got? Right. He could have been somehow he's seen the justice system fail in some way. I mean, you could tie it back to the police's inability to find the killers of his family, but I think that's kind of weak.
You know what I would caution against, just because of my own personal belief system? I get really tired of seeing the police beaten down again and again and again and again.
I agree.
Like they're corrupt, or they just don't give a shit or whatever.
So give us an alternative.
Yeah, so something where maybe there's, you know, we have so many damn budget cuts right now that they're just, maybe they're just stretched so thin that that's part of why these guys got away that killed his family.
Oh, my God, that's his job.
There's red tape.
That's Dennis's job.
Huh? Is
a social worker. Or, okay, or, perfect. Or yeah. Works for yeah. family services or something where he is right. exposed time and time again. Oh, yeah. To all the horrors yeah. that we inflict on ourselves. And his family was the only thing that served as a reminder that there is something good and sweet in the world. That's a little right. oversimplified, but, you know, yeah, there you go.
That's perfect.
Well, and I'll tell you that from, you know, my wife and I are both teachers. My wife's a special ed teacher, and obviously I can't give total specifics. But we, time and time again, there are situations where, you know, she's called social services, and social services has found a reason not to come out and investigate because they just do not have the manpower. And so we see these kids that are in these situations that, you know, we're powerless to get them out of.
Again, there's that theme, powerless.
Yeah.
Powerlessness. Yeah. And which is, I think, the essence, and again, I'm not a psychologist, and Tony, you might be able to speak to this more, but the vigilante mindset would be a reaction to powerlessness.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Mark, you've got a stronger theme now on Dennis and his motivations as to why this outlet is a possibility for him.
Yeah. Ooh, and what if he was there when his family was killed and somehow he was rendered powerless and watched them die?
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that would be horrifying. Well, and then,
that lends itself to that whole sense of I have to be in control of myself. I have to be able to be in power. Because the one time that I needed to be, I was out of power and I had no choice.
And that's perfect because then that mirrors at the end when he kills Eugene, Josh is in the same position that he was when his family died.
There you go.
So, bam! So and Dennis can recognize that and oh my God, and that is the crippling moment when he realizes, yes, I belong in jail. I'm broken.
I just did the same thing to Josh that these other people that I've been looking for did to me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Another question mark.
Okay.
The people who killed his family, was it a random crime or was there a motive for that?
Random.
Just totally random.
It's totally random because I had them. They were shopping. That's why I had the convenience store. He goes back to it kind of thing, but I didn't want to do the whole scene.
You got an alternative for that, Tony?
What? Oh.
Yeah, I'm just toying with what you were saying, Dave, about the possibility of him being part of the system.
Okay.
You know, perhaps he was a social worker who was involved in taking someone out of an abusive home. Or perhaps maybe even he was a judge in children youth court.
Ooh.
That might be even more interesting because, you know, how often does a judge become a vigilante? Well, maybe this guy's very jaded and... To him, this seems like the only way to make things right, because perhaps as a judge he felt powerless, following the law and giving people back to abusive situations.
Yeah.
There's so many different ways you can go with that.
Right.
And you know, maybe his name isn't Dark Agent. Maybe they call him Judgment.
Judgment, yeah.
We already have Judge Dredd, you know?
Yeah. I mean...
As far as, like, if he was a social worker or something in that field, judge or whatever... a lot of the kids that we have sort of pulled out of their homes were in meth homes. And, you know, they pull the kid out and immediately, like within an hour of picking the kid up from school or whatever, they're moving in to like three or four different meth houses. And that could be your connection to whatever this massive thing is, that if he's the reason that they were found out, that could, you know, that could target him and his family. And
I was going to say I could have him work as the CPS and go through all that stuff and really with all the
sure.
kids. Even, you know, how some of them even have to be out of state, move out of state for protection.
Yeah,
sure.
And
this could be an act of vengeance on the part of one of the parents. You know, you took away my family, now I'm going to take away yours. This is your fault.
Yeah, but he doesn't know which one.
Well, and they can be hidden. They can be mad. Yeah, exactly. He doesn't know which one. He doesn't know who they are.
Yeah, I have a way out of that, though. But go ahead.
Well, and, you know, again, and I don't want to expand your cast list any more than it already is, but, you know, having a tie-in to the police investigator who's investigating his case. And again, that's not necessary, I don't think, but when I suggest stuff like that, there's insights into backstory, and environment and motivation for a character that, mm-hmm. if it stays inside the character's head all the time, gets real boring. Unless you have a really good narrative style. And you may, Mark, and I'm not saying that you don't, but if you bring in characters that they can play off of that represent the different foibles and psychoses and pathologies that are driving the character, then through dialogue and action, you can show us rather than tell us.
I'd rather show.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, that you have a host of orbiting characters here that weren't in your initial presentation and maybe don't need to be there. But, you know, the principal investigator for his parents, see, I'm going Bruce Wayne, for his family's murder investigation would be someone that you could bring in there. Maybe he's tasked, maybe Dr. Oldman goes to him and says, I'm concerned about Dennis. He seems to be acting very strange, blah, blah, blah. And now he gets into the situation. Maybe he's the one who brings Dennis down. You know, there's irony for you. And puts him in the prison. You know, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And him being a CPS, just as a side note, would give him access to a lot of files, and that could be how he knows Josh, yeah. or knows of Josh.
Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm.
And how he finds people then that when he does go out and do his vigilante, he's got all the files. He knows where people live. He knows what their background is and what their records are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And I usually don't do this, but I'm gonna put in my two cents. Tony's idea about the drug, the enhancing drug, I'd actually kind of stay away from that personally. And again, this is my perspective. Tony's suggestion brings in a very intriguing engagement of drug addiction, which creates interesting parallels. If it is a drug addiction, just make it a regular drug, because what you've got here is everything is very accessible, very relatable. Everyone can relate in some way or other to the hardships and horrors that are unfolding here. And by creating an experimental drug that enhances and augments him in some way, mm-hmm. I personally think that tends to distance the characters a little bit and makes it more superhero-y. And what you've got unfolding here is a very dramatic and relatable tragedy that's unfolding. No offense, Tony, in terms of that.
Oh, no. I guess the question is, does he want this to be gritty crime drama or superhero story? That's
good
the
point.
Question here.
Good point. Excellent point.
Yeah.
What do you think, Mark?
I think I thought it was going to be a soup, but I think it's going to be gritty.
Yeah,
because it brings it down more to something that actually could happen.
Yeah, yeah.
It's gritty soup.
Gritty vigilante soup. But I'm looking at the time, guys, and we kind of need to start down the road of taking this home. So Tony, last thoughts, insights, questions, and suggestions, recommendations for Mark.
One more thing I'm wondering about is combat. What kind of combat is involved here?
Ooh, good question.
Yeah. Cool weapons?
No. It was I wasn't planning on any weapons. It was going to be strictly fist-to-fist fighting. But you never know who might be carrying a knife or have a 9mm with them or something.
If you're dealing with drug dealers, there's going to be guns, dude.
Especially if you're dealing with drugs, usually you got a gun.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
uh-huh. Right.
It sounds like in its very essence, what you have here is more crime drama than superhero, because I think for superhero, you have to go over the top in some way, whether with the combat or the weaponry or something.
And I think that's part of the reason why we went the way we did with this, Mark, mm-hmm. is because you created very believable scenarios. And very authentic, I think, characters in the onset. And I think our natural inclination was to continue in that vein rather than go towards the more broad stroke of the almost comic graphic novel storyline. So, but anything else, Tony, for wrap-up?
Yeah, but then again, doing it as a crime drama, you can still follow the basic pattern and outline of the comic book hero and in a way be a subversion of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Maybe have references to comic book heroes throughout the book in some subtle way just to kind of draw the parallel.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
That would be fun. Brian, what do you got, my friend?
The only hang-up that I still have is at the very end with Josh.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that.
Taking the mantle and running with it. And I don't see that happening unless there is some kind of specific moment of understanding or relationship between he and Dennis in some manner way earlier on. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise I see him then just running away from the whole thing, starting a family and trying to bury all of it.
Or engineering his death.
Or just a simple closure. Like, hey, I know what you did. That's it. I
know why you did it.
Just, I had to see you one last time and then bam.
People can heal from these wounds. Yeah. That's actually kind of a nice final closure.
He went the better direction, the direction that we all should go, as opposed to, you know, and then you actually have a really, really interesting theme.
Yeah.
Closing in on you know, for the book.
Yeah.
Yeah, there doesn't have to be another dark agent guy-ish guy at all.
Yeah. Well, and there could be a lot of copycats. I mean, that was played very cool in the second Batman movie. All those copycats wanting to be as badass as Batman. Wayne. And obviously that didn't work out. So, you know, you can explore that dark, seamy underside as well.
Oh, I love that idea. Have you read the book, The Name of the Wind?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Patrick Rothfuss.
Yeah, it's kind of like this is the legend of this amazing guy, and when you actually hear the story, he's not that amazing. Maybe in a way it's kind of like that this guy becomes a legend out there, but the real story is pretty unremarkable.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's
it's
fascinating.
It's tragic. It's not heroic.
Right. Especially if when Dennis finally does kill the person that's responsible for the death of his family, there's no catharsis in it. Yeah. He doesn't gain from it what he thought he would.
It's and a then footnote. That would,
Mm-hmm. So other than that, I love it. And, we could go on with this for days. I hope that something that we threw out there is going to help you in some way, even if you don't take it the way that we said it, but it just sparks something, then, you know, that'd be cool.
Yeah. Shoot, I wrote two nice pages work. Of I wrote two pages of all these notes here.
Yeah, well, and nothing that we've said or suggested, Mark, prevents you from pursuing that original superhero vibe and adding authenticity, adding authentic conflicts and emotions to that can just amplify and accentuate that superhero theme. So, you know, we walked down a path, all four of us, and it was a dark and gritty path, and I think there's some real gold out there. What you do with it next, and I don't envy you the task, because you've got some wonderful paths and many paths to walk down, but you can only write one. So I think it's when you first pitched the story, it started firing stuff in my brain instantly. It's a great concept. There are archetypal, there are tropes, even some cliches that are in there. But I think if you look deep enough into what those are, look at, you know, the motivation. Why work out? Not just he starts working out. Why does he work out? Why does he take defense? You know, is he attacked? Give these steps and stages towards Dennis's ultimate either A, heroism, if that's where you're going, or as we've discussed, his ultimate descent into villainy, into someone who belongs in jail. Find those steps, each individual one, and support them utterly and authentically so that when we get to that final moment, we've seen this mild-mannered civil servant go to a cold-blooded, well, not cold-blooded, a hot-blooded, furious, passionate murderer, and we can understand how he got there. And taking us by the hand along those roads is always, always intriguing reading. So you've got some awesome stuff here, Mark, and it's fabulosity. Fabulous. Absolutely. Thank you. Now, here's the deal. All right. We used to say that you have to go off and publish your book, and when you accept your Hugo or your whatever the equivalent is for crime drama or whatever, that you remember us, you come back so we can put your name on the Hall of Fame. We've actually changed that in recent days. If you finish this story, Mark, and put it out there, not if, when you finish this story, when you finish it, you sell it for a six-figure advance, or get it up, even just get it up on Amazon or Smashwords or even podcast that bad boy, we will bring you back and we will make you a knight of the round table. You will be exalted.
That's right.
That's fucking awesome.
we'll even use a sword.
We will use a sword on the air, and we will knight you Sir Mark of the Round Table, and we will plaster you under the Royal Order of Round Table Knights up on our website.
Oh, that's great.
There you go. And if you don't, we'll hunt you down with a sword and poke you with it. So, there.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Yeah. Very cool.
By the sword.
Yes. Live by the sword, die by the sword. Or, as Pip Valentine says, learn to love the whip. Antonio Del Drago, Tony, thank you so much for joining in on this glory fest of story workshopping. Your insights kept us focused on, I think, what are some of the core points and led us into wonderful directions, and we're so deeply appreciative of you coming in and playing in our sandbox for a while, man.
You guys are fun to play with.
There we go.
It was good to have you. You know, Dave, ever so often he'll crack the whip on me because we both have a tendency to kind of go into the details and really pick apart the little things that we like to play with, and you did an excellent job of bringing us back to the story elements that would give him the most bang for his buck. So it was definitely good to have you on.
Thanks.
Yep. And Mark, it's never easy, man, to bring your babies up and put them on the table and have everybody poke at them and look under their dress. And I have always have great admiration and respect for anyone that does that. So thank you very much for offering your story and letting us play around in it for a while. It was great fun.
Yeah, thanks to all three of you. It really helped out.
Awesome. That's all we can hope for. Whew. Oh, wow, Brian. Gold, baby. I'm looking around saying, holy crap, there's gold freaking everywhere. Just amazing.
It's very shiny in here.
It is. Any closing thoughts or insights as we wind this bad boy down?
Yeah, I'm going to go eat gritty soup.
And, gritty vigilante soup.
Yeah, and the rest of you go right.
Excellent. Excellent indeed. And dear friends, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you guys had as much fun as we did. If you did, like us on Facebook. We're very likable chaps.
Yes.
Give us some love out on iTunes, a rating or a review. Thank you, especially to those who have done so. That means so much. If you've got ideas for Mark, and I know you do, yes, you, I'm looking at you in the dress, you and you with the cutoff jeans, yeah, you got to come out to the Roundtable website, roundtablepodcast.com, and leave some comments on the post for this particular episode. Mark, definitely check back, and I'll give you a heads up if any comments come up so we can continue the dialogue there. Oh my goodness. Guys, as awesome as this was, as exhausted as we all are, in a couple of days, it starts all over again. Another awesome guest host, another brave and talented guest writer, more story workshopping, more gold to be had.
That's
right. Brian said it, guys. Go right. And I will say, you find what you're looking for. Look for wow. Look for amazing. Look for dark vigilantes in the corner. But definitely go look for good stuff and find it. We'll see you guys in a couple of days. Until then, thank you so much. We will talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This episode is copyrighted 2012 by the Roundtable Podcast and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. That means don't sell it, but you can share it all you like. And you can even use pieces of it in your own derivative work, as long as you attribute us as the source and release the work under the same licensing terms. Theme music composed and performed by the talented Hepcats of Brotown. Gary Gold, David LaBruyere, Billy Nobel, and Matt O'Donnell. If you'd like to be a guest writer or guest host, or learn more about the Roundtable Podcast, please visit our website at www.roundtablepodcast.com or visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/roundtablepodcast. Our Twitter tag is at writerspodcast, or just send us an email at thetable@roundtablepodcast.com. Thanks for listening.